Srimad-Bhagavatam 8, Canto Chapter 1, entitled The Manas, Administrators of the Universe, Text Number 8. Sunandayam Varsasatam
Sunandayam Varsasatam
Vadaikena Bhuvan Spesam
Vadaikena Bhuvan Spesam
Tapyamanas Tapogodam
Tapyamanas Tapogodam
Idam Manvabharata
Idam Manvabharata.
Translation: O Sayana Bharata, after Swayambhu Manu had thus entered the forest with his wife, he stood on one leg on the bank of the river Sunanda, and in this way, with only one leg touching the earth, he performed great austerities for 100 years. While performing these austerities, he spoke as follows. Purport. Srila Vishwanathapati Thakur comments that the word anvaha means that he chanted or murmured to himself, not that he lectured to anyone. So in the last few days, we have started on this eighth canto, beginning to describe the great pious Manus who live for a very long time and reside in the higher regions of the universe. And such personalities are always aware of the need for purification. So therefore we have also applied it to ourselves and have spoken about the need for purification. And purification, as we can see, it goes along with sacrifice, which is a topic we have discussed, and it goes along with austerity. Tapo divyam putra kiyena sattvam sukhet that austerity is required, and that such austerities for the Supreme Lord will bring one to a state of transcendental consciousness. So yeah, that is applicable for every age. The process may be different. We may not be standing on one leg at this stage. We may not perform the same kind of austerity that Swayambhu Manu performed, but the principles remain the same. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is very relevant to us, although Swayambhu Manu is taking a slightly different process because he lived at a different time under different circumstances and had obviously different bodily facility than we have in this age of Kali. Our strength is very diminished, our tolerance is very diminished, so considering all that, for us there may be another level of austerity or sacrifice. But our austerity, our first and foremost austerity, is to follow the regulative principles and to chant 16 rounds. Somehow or other, that is our first prescribed duty. And when we speak about tapa, austerity, that's what it is. And it may at times be more austere and at times be less austere. Not only due to the level of spiritual advancement, obviously in the beginning these spiritual standards are more difficult, and later on one may follow them with a higher taste. But then, still, austerity is there as long as we are in the material body. When health is not good, then even for one who is spiritually enlivened, chanting becomes more difficult. Just the effort is more difficult. So austerity is anyway the nature of the material world, tapo bhumi. We are in this world which is designed in that way, that austerity is inevitable. We are freezing in Cape Town, not freezing, but a little fresh. One can freeze literally in Scandinavia. There you can see what freezing gold really is. This is not gold, it's just that our response to the gold is not very very good in South Africa, in the sense that we don't know how to deal with gold. We don't protect ourselves in the same way as they do in colder places. Right? Sweden is the best place to be in the cold because it's perfect in the house. Yeah? The bathroom floor is warm. Makes sense. It's a logical place to make it warm. Not here. It's freezing, it's cold. So some austerity is there in the material world. It is that we cannot avoid. So also spiritual life has its austerity, undoubtedly. In Krishna consciousness we are not looking for separate austerity. That is not the requirement. We can have a certain degree of material comfort, not excessive. Excessive meaning at the expense of so much energy to just for the sake of a little extra comfort. But comfort is fine. We see that Srila Prabhupada in the Holy Dhams made nice arrangements for the international devotees. And he said, I would be satisfied to stay in this hut. He said, but you're not accustomed to these things, so that will be difficult. Therefore, you know, we make some comfortable arrangement. Right? I mean, a place without running water would be a little complicated for us. And only cold water. Some of us might decide, like, well, this bhakti yoga is not for me. if cold water is attached to it. So therefore that's all right. The water can be warm and other things can be comfortable, but the chanting must go on. That must go on. So that is the level of austerity where one cannot say, now this is also too difficult. No. The mind will surely say, this is too difficult, absolutely. But it's the alternative, we have no choice. The alternative is worse, that we have to understand. If you say that this chanting is too difficult, we act as if we have an alternative. Say, well, if I'm not chanting, I'll be better off. That's what the mind is thinking. But that's not the case. We'll be worse off. Much worse off, because no shelter. Therefore, this shelter of chanting is very important. And again, we must endeavor to somehow or other fulfill this. And therefore, a promise so that it stands, irregardless of the circumstances that the three modes of material nature create. Sometimes favorable, sometimes unfavorable, whatever it may be. In this way, that is our austerity, to fix ourselves like this. This principle of fixing oneself in one type of worship is a spiritual principle. Savaimana Krishna Padaravindiyo, one must fix the mind on Krishna. And we can see that then through some fixed form of sadhana, sankhya-purvaka-nama-kadana-tibi, one must chant a fixed number of rounds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is said, sometimes it's mentioned that he was chanting on a string with knots, right, instead of beads, string with knots for counting. Other times it said he was counting on his fingers, like that, whatever it may be. He was counting, sankhya purvaka nama kadana tibi, the chanting. There must be counting. That is required. But spiritual life is certainly not a process of austerity alone. There is an element of austerity, but the austerity is actually in the background. Because, after all, comfort is allowed, nice foodstuffs, when they're remnants of Krishna, can be taken. One can dress up, right? There's no prohibition to dressing up, and that's fine, and that's okay. So if you look at it, we are the level of austerity is not so high, and it's just sense gratification, right? Sense gratification. Yeah, but sense gratification doesn't work. Right? So what are we giving up? Oh, I have to give up sense gratification. Well, yes, but in the mind, it's a big thing what we have to give up. But in reality, it's not a big thing what we have to give up. Because in reality, this sense gratification will always inevitably turn into suffering. Although initially there seems to be some enjoyment. Therefore, my spiritual master told the New York policeman who asked him, and what should you give up when you want to be a monk? Suffering. It is that what we renounce, suffering, and nothing else. So, therefore, the regulative principles are nice. They are described as the principles of freedom. And chanting, although the activity may sometimes be austere, is giving us incredible power. Through this chanting, we are able to rise above the bodily platform and to rise above the three modes of material nature. So that is very positive. So the positive side is in the forefront, and there are so many positive aspects to spiritual life.
So it's not all about austerity. That is clear.
And we discover Krishna, his attractive features, Krishna's beauty, and Krishna's pastimes, Krishna who rises early in the morning. And before doing anything, Krishna will milk the cows. Although all the devotees are very eager to see Krishna, the first thing he will do, even before taking his bath, is milking the cows. The cows also are uncomfortable because their udders are filled with milk, so they're mowing, to let know it's time, and they will not allow anyone to milk them. Krishna has to be the first one to milk. So the fact that their udders are filled with milk is only an excuse to get Krishna to come to their cow shed. So the cows have the first claim. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Jagatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo. First the cows, go, and then the Brahmanas. Not first the Brahmanas and then the cows. No, first the cows. Krishna puts the cows before anything. So yeah, that is interesting. We may also contemplate on this, on the importance of somehow or other being favorable towards the cows, to always be favorably disposed towards the cows. Generously disposed towards the cows, and from that everything becomes very auspicious. It is nice that Vedic culture is arranged in that way. Vedic culture is nice because Vedic culture is a reflection of spiritual culture, of the culture of the spiritual world. It's sometimes a debate has arisen about, do you really need to wear these clothes? It's like, you know, dhotis and saris, it's so outlandish, it's so out of the time. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, in his Hare Krishna at SMU, which were essays that he wrote during his academic study years, and he describes himself that he was standing in front of the students to make a presentation, and that the professor introduced him like a living time warp, right? A living time warp, or a manifestation of something that shouldn't have been there, right? Referring to the way he was dressed, right? Somehow or other, as if Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come out of another era, you know, from like thousands of years ago, and suddenly stood there in front of everyone. So devotees sometimes appear like that, so out of place in society, and that seems to be, well, I mentioned that also earlier, that is another aspect of austerity, you know, to be so different from mainstream society, we may feel. So the question was raised, you know, do we really have to dress like this? Yeah. Do we really have to wear Indian dress? Yeah. If one is not Indian, do we really have to eat Indian food? Right? You know, do we really have to eat sabji and roti and dal and rice? I mean, can't we just have bread and things like that, and peanut butter or something with jelly, you know, or pasta and pizza and all these good things in life, you know. What about it? Well, the point in response to that is that really it is not Indian culture. But Indian culture actually is unique. It's Vedic culture, and Vedic culture is transparent to spiritual culture, to the culture of the spiritual world. And that makes it interesting. You see, there are dhotis, saris, and these kind of clothes in the spiritual world. That makes it. There are sabji puris, and kachoris and samosas and so on, and many other preparations in the spiritual world. There are, you know, ragas in the spiritual world. Right? What can I say? All these, there are tamburas, there are sitars, and these things are found in the spiritual world. Yeah? So it is very interesting that what in the world is known as the culture of India is not the culture of India, but that it is a descending culture. A descending culture, a culture coming from the spiritual sky. That, of course, like, to the world may sound ridiculous as when we say that the Ganga is coming from the causal ocean. Give us a break. No, we don't give you any breaks. It is all coming from the spiritual world. And that is reality as it is. So, but that is why all these things are beneficial, actually. That is why the dress, the way to eat is all helpful, because it is all relating to the original culture of the spiritual world. Some years ago, Mukunda Maharaj and Druta Karma Prabhu co-authored a book called Divine Nature. And their whole point, it was all a book about ecology and the environment, and sort of like a book written for the issues of the day. And But it was based, besides that the book gives lots of statistics about, how a vegetarian diet would do better than meat eating in terms of the environment and these kind of things. And it gives us all kinds of information. If we keep on cutting the trees like this, they will be finished in 40 years or something like that, or less, whatever it may be. But underlying in the book is a theme, and the underlying theme is the positive alternative. And then it describes Vrindavan as the model. Vrindavan as the, speaking about the, not the Vrindavan in North India, but the Vrindavan, or not the covering of that in North India, but the spiritual Vrindavan, the village of Krishna. And that, of course, has, that image has been proliferated by devotees from time to time, just like our Sri Prahlad had a band named Village of Peace. Simply, same thing, right? Vrindavan, the ideal world. So that's very simple. In that way, for us, spiritual life is not complex, it's not complicated to figure out how to live, really. Yesterday I showed an article which I sort of downloaded to Viu Chaitanya, who said he could relate to it. And it was about a very reluctant house husband. And it was all about the fact that more men, this is in the UK, by the way, but more men are getting fired due to economic recession than women. And many men lose their jobs. And the story about a man who lost his job and who really tried to get back on something. I mean, everywhere applying for jobs and just not getting a job. And then, finally, the family was getting in trouble, 3 kids and just no money. So finally, she also had a degree, and finally it thought that maybe she should try to apply as well. And she got a job in no time. And then, then she's like going in her trendy business suit to the office every morning, and he's with the with the apron in the kitchen, taking care of the 3 kids. And sort of describes, the article describes how he's trying to get one, he's trying to get the 2 younger boys in the car so that he can pick up the older girl from school, and the boys, they refuse to go out. So it's raining, we're not going. So it becomes a whole thing. He picks one up as a rugby ball and just sort of like shoves it in a coat, and then grabs the other one, which is running away, and just drags him out in the car while they're crying. But anyway, and drives off, right? And then the car doesn't start. And then he's got to call his wife, that she has to, on the way from work, maybe leave a little early today to pick up the daughter. And that's just another day in the household, right? So it's an interesting model. It's really interesting how the lady is like the breadwinner, and sort of in touch with the world. And she's out there with a bigger world, communicating with her phone, and he is just at home, in the kitchen and vacuum cleaning, and that's just this life. And there were several cases. One man couldn't handle it, his male ego got hurt and he became an alcoholic. He went through different stages, like the article. It's interesting if you want. I can post it somewhere on a blog or something. Look at it. It's, So this is the situation in a world which is so artificial. So our modern way of life is artificial. I am like sometimes disclosing people's secrets. So now rather late walked in, I'll tell one of her secrets also. It's not a serious one. But like she showed me the other day 4 degrees, like bachelor's, honors, master's, and PhD, and she has small copies of it, like laminated like cards, you throw them on the table like the 4 cards, right? And then she says that I don't really know what I'm gonna do, but actually I really like cooking. That was too good, I couldn't resist to like. And what a strange world, right? We put people through all these degrees, but actually they like cooking. And it's just a funny world, right? A funny world. Because in the spiritual world, this is just a very natural thing. You see, not only do ladies like cooking, ladies like to feed. Right? They like to feed, and they love it somehow or other. They love to see that people eat more than they can. And this also comes from the spiritual world, from Mother Yasoda, who says, it's like Rohini is already starting cooking early in the morning. Radharani comes in a bit later and cooks up more. Yasoda has already made all kinds of sweets before and so on. And all this is being served out to Krishna for breakfast. Right? And he is making a serious attempt. But of course, there's a lot left, because it's ridiculous what's on the table. And then Mother Yasoda says, "You're not eating anything." Right? He's already eaten like 4 times or 10 times as much as one could normally eat. And still she's saying, "You're not eating anything." So I recognize that, like without any malice or anything or any sexism. But I see that like ladies, they do that, They cook we travel and then we ask for some travel basalam, right? And then they come with a bag, which is like twice the size of my hand luggage. Right? And then they look at you like, when they say, "Isn't it a bit much?" And they look at you like, "But you might get hungry on the way." When I finally put it under my sweater, and I look like I'm 9 months gone, right? Then I sort of indicate, that like, how could all this possibly go inside the stomach, right? And then they sort of realize, well, maybe it is a bit much, actually. But the natural tendency is there in it's just because it's there in the spiritual world. It's there in the spiritual world. And that is how it is. So once we've understood this principle, that everything is simply based on the spiritual world, then we have a very clear guideline in our life. We actually can see, we have a model. Suddenly we have a secret model which always applies in any situation. And then we take the root verse, one of the root verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Rite Tam Yat Pratyeta Na Pratyeta Chatmani Tat Vidya Tat Manomayam Yato Tama Yato Vasa. We just take that verse where you just measure the value of anything by its relationship with Krishna. So in this way, Krishna in his abode. So just put the spiritual world next to the situation that we live in and try and get a little closer to the spiritual, to the model of the spiritual world, and life will improve. That's why I would say to that man, who was in the kitchen and who's fried being a house husband, and his wife was also not so happy, and said, get a block of land. Okay? Go get a block of land and get a cow. Right? grow some veggies, grow your milk, go towards self-sufficiency, get out of this crazy artificial global economy, okay, where China is killing us. And we're happy to be killed by China, you know. Made in China, made in China, made in China, made in China. it's like, you know, and it's like that. It's like, at one point in India, the Indira Gandhi, when she was in charge of the country, they declared an emergency, and because the economy was so bad, they declared an emergency, and then they got, like, by parliament, the right to stay in power for a prolonged period of time, because of the emergency, and they declared that emergency for a certain period of time. So that, and then what they did, the first thing they did was, all the import, right, was like becoming practically impossible. 400% duty on import. So, you know, then the result was India had to produce everything themselves. I remember you would buy socks, right, Indian socks. I mean, in Vrindavan we were buying Indian socks, and the first day they fit your feet. The second day they fit the feet of Donald Duck. Right? The third day, you know, an elephant would be comfortable in that, you know. I don't know what it is about these socks, you know. Like, or Indian matches, you know. I mean, only an Indian, you know, not a South African Indian, but an Indian is the only one who can light Indian matches, right? First of all, they always break. Second of all, they don't want to light, and it's like a special, you know, industry to see these people with. Someone called them. And then the thing, it actually works. Okay, next time you try and breaks and this and that. So, it was like that. But that helped, because India kept things local. So this global economy is making life more and more artificial and complicated, the pace of life so high and this and that. You know, everyone is living a mad life. And if we would actually, yeah, you know, like, I used to go to India, 40 years ago, and India was very simple. And then in the city of Benares, you know, there was this house, and you know, there was a doorway, it was open, and then a cow would stick its head out of the door, right? And you look, okay, here is the family cow. in the middle of the city. And people were keeping cows, even in the city. Right? Yeah, they had courtyards in Aberdeen. Everyone had a cow. And now still you can see that many people just keep a cow. This culture of keeping cows and having a little land where we are closer to Vrindavan will make life so much more natural and easy. And then there will still be austerity. But that austerity is actually favorable for spiritual life. We'll actually feel that it's helpful for spiritual life. See, it's like, when you don't have all these artificial facilities, now we're going to have a second power plant with the help of France, who are expert at power plants, a nuclear power plant in South Africa to meet the power grid, very good, and so that we can all have more electricity, very nice. And it's interesting that in the story of Bhaumasura, there is a description that Bhaumasura had a fort, right? And his city was very much fortified. And Krishna went there and defeated him. But he had, like, different walls. So he had electric fencing around his city. He wasn't even South African. Believe it or not. Yeah. No, seriously. Electric fencing around his city. He had like walls of gas. I mean, we can look into this, you know, maybe useful. Walls of gas. So it looks like he had a level of security which even by modern South African standards would be very advanced, you know, more advanced than we have. Anyway, so then it's mentioned in the story that actually electricity was known at that time. But who was using it? An asura. The Brahmanas, they were not using electricity because they knew if you start with that, you'll get trouble. You'll create a lot of trouble. Of course, I'm not saying we're going to switch off the electricity because then my heater will go off. And that's not a good idea. But we have built this artificial society, and it's so complicated now, and we're so locked into it. But it really makes life austere, actually. It makes life austere. When I lived in Australia on a farm, and I was eating, and we had all this fruit. We had, let me say, fresh peaches. We had good apples and pears. We had nectarines. We had fresh figs and fresh grapefruits, and of course grapes, red and green grapes. And you know, I'm not your super grapefruit fan, but have you ever had a grapefruit straight from the tree? I mean, they're good, you know. Like they're yummy good. And the strawberries, right? They were so good that when Bhakti Chirumaraj came to that farm, he went into the strawberry fields and he almost sung that song. He sang that song because he was, popping them straight into his mouth, you know. And it's going strong. So what can we say? Sweet for a change, you know. Taste, like that. So much milk, 17 cows we had, and 20 people. My God. I didn't know what to do with the milk, serious. You know, I mean, liters of shrikant, you know. I mean, huge quantities of, like, paneer, like, in the sabji. In fact, sometimes you would ask, can I have that piece of cauliflower? so much cheese. You know, it's like just... most of us didn't have much money, right? We didn't have money. I mean, I didn't have a cracker in those days. So I didn't have a car. I didn't have money. I didn't have much. I lived in kind of a simple facility. But I can't say that we lived bad. At least we're eating well. Quite well. No, it wasn't that bad. It was quite nice. It was in many ways quite nice. Yeah. So with all this, I kind of expanded from austerity into the spiritual world as a model for us, not just in terms of ecology, but also in terms of relationships. The spiritual world, it's the relationships of the spiritual world. 1 year, well, I think we had a reception in Durban for I think it was Bhakti Chirumaraj. Yeah, I'm mixing two receptions in my mind. There's another one for Giri Rajmas, this one for Bhakti Chirumaraj. But that was very, you know, a typical full-on Durban reception, you know, this reception where everyone is like going all out, right? I mean, it was an all-out reception. I mean, you know, I think there was no flower left in the bush, you know what I mean? I think all the the flowers had been picked and stringed and used for decoration, and endless things were there. And then it was nice. It wasn't just flowery words and lots of flowers, but there was a genuine appreciation behind it. There were loving exchanges behind it. So that is the spiritual world, loving exchanges. And based on worship. Worship is a very common thing in the spiritual world. They worship each other. Yes. That's like one worships seniors. Yes. Pull out the Arctic tray. There's always an Arctic tray everywhere. And that is nice, right? To have an Arctic tray ready, you know. Totally ready, just in case someone comes up. A Vaishnava has come to my house. Yeah. Like every year, the last few years at least, in Mayapur, Jayadvaita Maharaj decided that for the last day of Kartik, he would invite all Prabhupada disciples for prasadam. And they like it, they come. Because they know there is few left, the way you think, there is few of us left, and then therefore they come. They take that opportunity to come together. And then we were told yes, and then then we receive them with sandalwood and wash their feet. Some of you are also part of this activity. And it's pretty nice, you know, here we receive them and, Prabhupada's disciples wash their feet and put garlands and sandalwood, and we sit them down in a nice room with some nice conversation and drinks and this, that. Okay, my job is sort of to do that, you know. And then we serve like a whopper of a feast, of course, and at the end, Jayadvaita Maharaj personally gives them a donation also. Purifying, really. We all felt like, wow, this is purifying. But this is actually everyone. This is nice, you know. Many people started flying in for it. That's why Jayadvaita Maharaj said, "We're not going to have it this year." Too many people flying in. So, yeah, forget it now. No more flying in. No. Sorry. It was really nice. So that is the culture of the spiritual world. And whenever we do some of these things, it becomes very, very, very nice. And suddenly, the whole atmosphere becomes transcendental. And then, then sometimes we even forget we're in the material world. And the more we do these things, the more we feel we're in the spiritual world. So when I speak about Vrindavan as a model, I don't mean just about the ecology, but I started with the cows. But I also mean relationships. And actually, for every aspect of life, we can look at Vrindavan. So, and the more we find out about it, we find that there's art and culture. It's not just, I guess, we have to become farmers now. Farmers are not, in South Africa, they're known as boere. And the boer, right? My mother always told me, don't eat like a boer, don't sit like a boer. In the Netherlands, this is like what mothers tell their children. Don't speak like a boer, and so on. So the boer is not kind of known for its culture. Rugby and all that, right? So is this the future of the Hare Krishna movement? Are we all going to become Buddha? Some may say, well, I'll give that a miss. No, there is refined culture. If we look at the culture of Vrindavan, there is refined culture, dressing up in one's best and throwing yogurt mixed with turmeric on everyone's clothes and things like that. There are festivals, and there are festivals for every occasion. Nothing is just, you know, it's not like, farming, you know. I must say, I was in Australia on that farm, and there were devotees who were like real farmers, right? And they were like having ecstatic symptoms about the size of a cauliflower, which kind of, you know, what can I say? And they were like discussing, they were not only growing cauliflowers, they were talking about cauliflowers all the time. I think, like, my God, you know, I'm becoming a cauliflower on this thing, on this farm. Because personally, I don't care if you have big cauliflower or small cauliflowers, you know, I mean, I just, if it's a big one, I take one, and if it's a small one, I take two. What's the big deal, right? So, for me, it doesn't make much difference, to be honestly, you know. They have ecstatic symptoms. So I felt this was a little oppressive. Can we talk about Krishna, please? Krishna, not cauliflower. Krishna, please. No, cauliflower. But this is not the culture of the spiritual world. Everything is celebrated. The time of planting is done at an auspicious time, and then everyone comes out with a celebration. The harvest, it is offered to, it is a celebration, and everything is offered to Krishna. It's not just, so there's a lot of worship. And even in India today, we see things like that. We see little temples in the fields, right? Small, every field there has a little temple. How nice. I remember that when I used to go to India. I used to like it so much, these little temples. This spiritual culture was just touching every aspect of life. And in that way, it becomes refined instead of gross. Vrindavan is our model in every respect. Okay, any questions, any comments?
What I'd like to know, what makes a cow so special? Is it only the fact that she's being seen as a mother, or is another explanation to that?
Yeah, I mean, everything about the cow is auspicious, right? The stool, the urine, it's all auspicious. It all produces good results, right? One can take the milk, one can even drink the urine. I was in South India, got a tour of the Goshala from the temple president of Tirupati Temple. He takes me to the cows, and there's the cows, and one cow starts passing urine. He puts his hand under the cow, catches it, and drinks it. And he goes, and I look at him like, a little shocked, you know, to be honest. And sort of like, and he says, yeah. My grandmother taught me that, like, you know, whenever you see a cow pass urine, drink it. My grandmother didn't. Although I still have some difficulties with those things, right? Because my grandmother didn't teach me. it's at least I can accept it, you know, philosophically, that everything about the cow is auspicious, right? The urine, the stool, everything. Everything is just auspicious. The demigods are residing within the body of the cow. Yeah. It is ultimately Krishna, right, who has somehow or other arranged it in that way. Yeah. This is the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. If you ask why is the cow so sacred, it is the old banana question, you know, why are bananas curved? Because they are. Cows are sacred. Ultimately, Krishna has arranged it like that, and in the spiritual world, there is Kamadenus. Surapibhyascha sumahanime sadakyuna vrajatina hiyatrapi samayaha. Oceans of milk, it is said. Oceans of milk are there. Yes, from these Surabhi cows. So, these Surabhi cows, these wish-fulfilling desire cows, are part of the eternal arrangement of the spiritual world. And here in the material world, we simply have the pratibimba, the reflection of the spiritual world. So, therefore, here also, the cows. It takes a little while to appreciate that. I mean, I kind of grew up in an urban environment, although on the edge, so there was forest nearby and nice hills and things. And, you know, we used to sometimes just go out and just go into the fields where there were cows, and then you would walk on the fields. And if you were not careful, you would step into one of those things, you know, lying there, so plop in your whole foot. Oh my God, you make me vomit. The biggest horror for a city dweller is to step in a pile of cow dung or something. So it takes some time for us to appreciate the cows. But actually, if we simply protect the cow, our whole, then Prabhupada says, then economy problem solved. The solution for the economy, protect the cow. Economy problem solved. Health issues, cow products. Health problems solved. Right. So it's like that, the cow is just meant for us, to give us a peaceful society, a peaceful way of life, the right food, everything proper. So in that way, the African culture is doing well. Because in African culture, a lot is based on cows. Cows are wealth. The more cows one has, the more wealth. That is very much part of the African culture. I mean, in America, in Europe, cows are wealth. Well, you know, okay, America, the land of beef and beer. But nowadays, industry, right? That's wealth. Industry, that's real wealth. But real wealth is land and cows. So, you should think about that. Sooner or later, that we'll be forced to go that way. Yeah. And then it's like, I may die before, but you will probably still be alive when the world will have to go in that direction. They even have it still in my lifetime, you know. Can you milk cows? You ever milked a cow? Never. Anyone ever milked a cow? Hey, there's one here. Any other question?
So Maharaj, you speak about if when I become a monkey, I will give up the suffering. So we have to take what is the request to take it, like as enjoyment in the spiritual world, or what to speak of that.
Yeah, but in the material world, so see, whatever in the material world, there are two things: suffering and enjoyment, isn't it? Yeah. But the thing is that the enjoyment in the material world, because it's temporary, it also turns into suffering. because then it's gone. And then you suffer. Therefore, happiness, enjoyment plus temporary is also suffering. And suffering is already suffering. So therefore the material world says in the Gita, Dukhaniyam Asashvatam, there's only suffering and it is temporary. So the enjoyment is illusory because it's temporary. What good is that? As soon as it's finished, you know, if you like, I know someone who had hundreds of millions and now doesn't have hundreds of millions. So can you imagine that I also don't have hundreds of millions, right? But I feel okay. But he doesn't have hundreds of millions, and he doesn't feel okay. He feels terrible. Yeah? He had hundreds of millions, now he doesn't have. Now he's suffering like anything. I don't have hundreds of millions, I'm not suffering that much. A little bit. Yeah? I could use a few more millions. But he's suffering much more, because he had it before. So, when we had material enjoyment before and we lose it, we'll suffer more. Yeah. You see? Therefore, all this false material enjoyment is not going to, it's not going to make us happy. It will give us some enjoyment. Go out the gates. Forget and try to enjoy. Oh yes, I'm enjoying. Yes, you're enjoying, but you're not happy. You're not fulfilled. Still hungry. You still need more. And then you'll just be roaming around looking to enjoy, but always hungry, looking here, looking there, trying this, trying that. So therefore, we understand, we'll take up spiritual life. Then in the beginning in spiritual life, there is austerity. So you say, yes, I came to Krishna consciousness because I wanted to give up suffering. Exactly, and then I came and then I still had to suffer. I'm suffering like anything since I'm a devotee, sometimes even more than I was suffering before. Maybe I should go back to suffering the way I used to suffer. No. Just go through this, and then, after some time, you rise above it. You rise above the suffering on the transcendental plane. But it takes some time to get there, to the transcendental plane above suffering. Or like someone said that spiritual life is very difficult. Okay, granted. But material life is impossible. So whenever you find spiritual life difficult, you can remember that. Material life may be difficult, but spiritual life is... Spiritual life may be difficult, but material life is impossible. Meditate on that for the rest of the day. Spiritual life may be difficult, but material life is impossible.